Sorry? I was gonna make her a bag. I thought of it, and then I was in Staples, and I wasn't sure if that would, I wasn't sure if that would intimidate her or not.
Shayla?
Thank you.
What are you supposed to be?
No, I gave you a handout. You're good. Yes. Okay. I think we're just about ready to begin. So first of all, I want to thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it. I'll just explain how this evening series is going to work and begin. We are live over here. We're broadcasting live. We have our audience here gathered at 5 Rose Lawn. As well, my brother-in-law, Rabbi Milder, my sister, Elisheva's husband, who lives in Milwaukee, has an interactive program on the internet, a Torah learning program. It's called CITE, I-T-E, Center for Interactive Education. And he does similar kinds of things. He has webinars of shiurim, classes, study partners, and other things like that. So he is joining with us tonight because there were people that had expressed an interest joining us, assistance wasn't due. So I asked him if he could help us out by creating, I know nothing about, those of you who are technologically oriented, he created some kind of webinar or webcam or, I don't know, the WebEx, I don't even know what the right term is, and other people also, they called in or they webbed in, whatever it's called, so they can see, they can only see us on the camera, so pretty much they could see unless I know who they are, but they'll be able to hear us. And we can't see them necessarily, but they can see us. We can be seen. I'm just going to ask everybody if just for the feasibility of everyone coordinating together, if we could just hold questions and comments till the end. And if those online could just mute their mics, please, so that we can all just benefit from each other, but not at the same time. I've never experienced live and online. Live and distance learning at the same time. So it's a first for me. I'm going to have to play around with that. So everyone could just mute and enjoy listening, I hope. Okay. So before we start, I want to thank you at my inaugural class. I think that it would be, before we start, I guess you're probably wondering about the name of the class and why I'm calling it this and how this all came to be. So I would like to explain that. So basically, as you see here on the flyer, I named the series or any classes that I will be giving, I called it Binoseha. Binoseha in English means her daughter. It could be translated literally, translated figuratively as well. And once you see where the wording came from, you can see the meaning of both ways. So it started out that there is a pasuk that I've always liked, and it comes from Tehillim. Pasuk is Hagelna Benos Yehuda, and the daughters of Yehuda, of Judah, shall rejoice. And being that my husband's name is Yehuda, I always had a kind of, you know, affinity to that pasuk, being also that I love all my kids, but most of my kids happen to be daughters. I just always thought it was a cute thing, the daughters or the children of Yehuda should rejoice. And in my head, at some point in my creative mind, I had always anticipated that one day I would take a picture of my kids with my husband, which has been done many times, but I never quite put it together with the pasuk. And it just kind of, like, in my mind, I just see Vatagelna Benosi, which I just see my husband and my kids, my daughters, just rejoicing and being happy together. So that is how I came to the name of this course. Because if you take the letters of the word banos, and then you take the first two letters of the word Yehuda, which is the yud and the hey, when you put the banos and the yud and the hey, the name of Hashem together, you get Benoseha. And it's kind of an acronym for the daughters of Yehuda, or the daughter shall rejoice, because it's a her, because it's feminine, it also connotates the Torah, which is a feminine word, her daughters, as, you know, the women of the Torah and learning of the Torah and our connection to the Torah. Now, how did that come about? Well, some 20-some-odd years ago, I was, I guess, you know, date myself, right? Some 22, 23, 24, I lost track of time, some many years ago, I was graduating high school, and I was going to seminary and going to college, and I had to decide what I wanted to do. and what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I didn't really feel that it was such a decision, because ever since I was little, I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up. I always wanted to be a Mora, I always wanted to be a teacher, and I wanted to be a wife, and I wanted to be a mommy. And my earliest memories, I could go back, like trying to remember for how long I wanted to be a teacher for, it goes back, I don't know, for sure until I'm like at 6 or 7 or 8 years old, I can picture myself in my room, setting up little chairs and setting up little tables and my dollies and taking out math workbooks and math sheets, taking out spelling tests, just me and my dolls and myself and whatever siblings would, you know, get sucked in, or friends came over and then it was inevitable, but Chamberlain, you were the teacher last time, you know. So I always knew I wanted to be a teacher, and I mean, I could remember, you know, at this point in my life, I guess I'm older and more mature enough to realize that maybe it wasn't so socially appropriate, but at the shiva for my grandparents, I had this, like, you know, room full of people that I entertained, I guess, so to speak, at, you know, ages 8, 9, or 10 years old by making them do at shiva for my grandparents. So I apologize now for doing that. It was probably inappropriate. But, so that's what I could think I wanted to be. However, everyone told me, Shayna, you can't be a teacher. If you want to support a husband, you can't teach. You'll never make it. I'm like, oh, that's really what I want to do. And they're like, okay, think about it. So I went to seminary, and in seminary we had some other courses as well. And one of the courses that they gave was an introduction to. And I did enjoy it. I really did like it. And I said, okay, if I can teach, I'll become a speech pathologist. So I went to Thoreau College. At the time, they did not have an undergrad speech program. It was an undergrad in psychology with a concentration in speech pathology. I got a BA in psychology with a concentration in speech, which is supposed to allow me to continue transfer those credits into a graduate program to actually get the master's. Life happened, and I had shmuley and asana. So basically, asana was due at the beginning of January, and I was hesitant to apply for grad school for that fall, you know, for that February semester, which would have been the spring semester, because I wasn't sure when she was going to be born. And I had seen some of my friends have babies and go back to school like within the week, and I just decided I was going to defer. Well, by the time I deferred to the fall, I decided, well, I'm teaching, which is what I was doing to support ourselves while I was in school. I had my babies, and still can do. I didn't want to leave my babies home. I didn't go for my master's. Okay, fast forward 20-something years later, my baby's 4 and a half. So I'm thinking, okay, now since I could go to school. What do I want to be when I grow up? And I'm thinking, but I am grown up. So I'm like, you know, surfing the web, and I'm looking into different fields and different things, what I can use my credit for, what I can use my degree in. I already have the bachelor's in psychology. Maybe I can up the degree. I have the credit for the speech. Maybe I can go back to that. And I'm just like looking at all these things. I'm thinking, no, I don't want to do that. I really, really don't. The things that I'm doing now are the things that I've always wanted to be doing. So, and then it happens that we had some friends come for Shabbos from New York area, and they had a wonderful visit. They really enjoyed Ottawa. They were really impressed by people that they met in shul. And we were talking about the community, and they were talking about classes or lectures or what organizations there are, and they said something about what about for ladies. What is their office specialty for ladies? And I said, I think of anything really major. So he said, oh, you know, and then the conversation continued. My mind was whirling. Okay? That Friday night, I did not sleep at all. I was up the whole night, and I said, oh, that's what I want to do. I love to teach. I love to learn. That's what I wanted to do. I'm 7 years old, and that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years. I don't need a degree to teach. I've already been teaching for 20-something years. I don't need another degree to teach. I don't think, I mean, you know, it's always better to learn more and, you know, increase your credits and this and that and keep up with the times and the changing of things. And I'm kind of, you know, listening vicariously. My daughter's going for her master's in special ed, so some things are coming back to me. But I think I just want to do more of what I'm doing and do more of what I love to do. And well, then, how about a group for ladies? And overnight, I'd say by the next afternoon, right, by the next afternoon, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to call it, although it wasn't Benoseha. It got morphed and it became more normal. It actually made some sense. It was like some other variation that was kind of off the beaten track. I don't remember it right now, but over the next few days, it evolved and I said, okay. So here we are. And what I wanted to do was to, because it's called Benoseha, Batagelna Benoseha, I wanted to dedicate all of the learning that we're doing as a marriage for my husband. You all know we had a very challenging year, and Baruch Hashem, we are very thankful and grateful to be where we are today. Baruch Hashem, we had a beautiful Pesach, you can imagine. It was like one of the nicest Yom Tovs we've had in a long time, and what made it special was that my husband was here and well for the entire Yom Tov. And I can't remember a Yom Tov when he was here and well in the last year and a half. So Baruch Hashem, and I want to thank you all for being here and for being a part of that and to help to add to that. What I wanted to do for tonight, but I realized we'll never get through all the things that I really want to do, so we'll save it to the very, very end. For the end of the last class, kind of this semester, to kind of pull everything together, we can actually calculate to some degree the value of a word of Torah. So there are different ways that we can calculate it based on how, well, I don't want to give it all away, but there's ways to calculate the value of this word of Torah. So if we think about it, how many of us there are gathered around tonight times 1 hour, each word of Torah times the 5 times that we'll meet. I'm very grateful to you for being here and for adding all of that to our special account. And with that, let's begin. Okay, so we're going to start with Devarim. I'm actually teaching Devarim now in Torah Academy. I felt like it was something that I had the groundwork for, and obviously we'll elaborate. I call this advanced Torah learning because we're mature women and we love to learn and we love to grow. Hebrew language, reading, understanding is not necessarily a requirement. I have provided handouts of the Pesukim that we're going to do and the Rashis that we're going to do in both Hebrew and English. So we'll go through that together. So don't be afraid of that. I don't want that to be inhibitor to anybody. And what I like to do is, I guess my style of teaching is to give kind of just like a little background of where we're at right now. And then I take a chunk, a section of Pesukim, and we go through what those Pesukim mean literally, the translation. And then once we have the basic translation, we can go through the Rashi to expand on that. And then I say it's like an onion. So now usually an onion is the connotation of an onion is usually something bitter. So let's say a sweet onion, like a purple onion, a sweet onion, because there's layers upon layers upon layers. So we'll look at the base level, we'll go down to the Rashi level, and then we're going to bring it down so that we can finally put it into a pretty package of a lesson that we can actually walk away and take home and apply to things that happen to us on a daily or weekly basis. So tonight's class is actually called Reducing the Embarrassment of Rebuke. Because we have here in Parshas Devarim, it's the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. It is actually, it's opening up on Rosh Chodesh Shabbat 2488. So that would be the new month of the month of Shabbat, which is approximately 37 days before Moshe has to pass away on Zion, 7 Adar of that same year, 2488 of the final year of the Jews in the desert. So he gathered them, and the goal of this sefer, the goal of the Devarim, is actually called Mishnah Torah, the repetition of the Torah, where he goes through and repeats to the Jews everything that's occurred to them over the 40 years of the desert. He's going to review with them the events that happened to them, both positive and negative. He's going to review with them some of the mitzvot and give more mitzvot. There's going to be blessings and cursings, and then final, at the end, is, you know, kind of a farewell message to the Jewish people. So, what we are going to see now is how the Torah starts off this book of the Torah. So, your handout should have the text. So, what you should find is that on the left side of your booklet, the handouts have the pasuk lined up with the English, and then the rashis are to follow. What I like to do first is to read through the pasukim as a unit, hear the flow of the words, pick up any familiar or words that call attention to us. I say that sometimes when the Torah is, you know that every letter, every word of the Torah is chosen for a specific purpose. It's each word that is used is designed especially to teach a different lesson. And if something is written in an unusual way or an incomplete way or in a more complete way than we've seen it before, it's kind of like a neon sign that's saying, look at me, please, please, look at me. So we're going to be looking at these words to try to see what are those look at me words, and then we'll take Rashi to tell us what we're trying to, what, you know, what is trying to be noticed about. Okay, so let's listen, and then we'll continue. Eile hadevarim, these are the words, asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael, that Moshe spoke to the entire Jewish people, ve'eder hayarzim, on the other side of the river, the Jordan River. They are on, you picture the map of Israel, they're on the eastern side of the river, ba'midbar, in the midbar, ba'arava, in the plains, mosuf, opposite the Suf, Bein Paran uBein Tofel Vilavan, between Paran, a place, and Tofel Vilavan, another place, Bachatzeros, and the Chatzeros, another place, the Dizahav, and another place called Dizahav. So it's listing like a geographic area of where they are. And it describes a little bit further. Achad Esar Yom MeChorev, it is 11 days from Chorev. Chorev is another word for Har Sinai, the place where they received the Torah. Zereh Har Seir, to go to, if you go through the way of the mountain of Seir, which is Edom, which is Esau, which is on the way towards Israel, Ad Kadesh Barnea, until Kadesh Barnea. Vayehi Barba Im Shana, and it was in the 40th year, Vaashtei Asar Kodesh, on the 11th month, Be'achad LaChodesh, on the first of the month, on the Rosh Chodesh of Shabbat, the 11th month of the Jewish calendar, Diber Moshe El Bnei Yisrael, Moshe spoke to the Jews, Kechol Asher Tziva Hashem Oso Aleihem, everything that Hashem had commanded upon him to say to the Jews. So, now that we've heard the actual words, we have to look for those, look at me, we have to look at for those expressions that seem out of place compared to other places in the Torah. That actually, I think, is one of my other reasons for loving to learn. I could attribute this to a fifth grade teacher that I had. She had this contest going, and whenever we learned something new, or whenever we were able to make a connection between something that we were learning, or something that we had seen, or we found a word in davening that was the same as a word in our chumash or in our navi, and we came over to her, or we raised our hand, or we came to her recess, she had this chart, and she would give you little stars, and then I'd say every so often, but it was really very long for a fifth grader to wait. It was much, not often enough. She would come in with prizes based on how many tickets or how many stars you got. I might have mentioned this before. I'm somewhat competitive. So my friend and I had this unspoken competition between us. So we would come up with outlandish things. Yeah, I saw that word. I was looking in Tanakh and I found the word Amar. He said, and I saw it over there. And like, poor teacher, I think she created a monster out of us. Didn't know what to do with us. She's giving us stars left and right. Basically, I think that we knocked everyone else out of the playing field. Everyone else lost interest. Me and my friends were going at it. And she's finally coming with her bag of pies and just set it all up. So I think that has really challenged me or caused me to like pay attention to nuances of words. So I know it's kind of ingrained in me now. So basically, if we look at Pasuk Aleph, we have a few of these shout at me words. It starts off with Ela Hadvarim. These are the words that Moshe said. That's quite lengthy. That's quite repetitious to say, here are the words that Moshe said. Why can't you just say Moshe said? Right? That's two words. Ayudaber Moshe. Moshe said, as opposed to one, two, three, four, five words. We said the Torah comes out and it's trying to teach lessons from every word that's there in as few words as possible. So the shortest way possible would have been for the Torah to say, Moshe said. And we do notice that the word for saying over here, the expression for talking here, is Dalet Beis Reish, Devarim, Diber, words. That's usually the connotation that they are harsh words, that they are words of rebuke, as opposed to Amar said, which is a more gentle tone. So we see these are the words that Moshe spoke. So we get the connotation that they are harsh words and it's more lengthy than it should have been said. So if we look down at the Rashi, we'll see why the Torah chose it. What does it say? Lefi shehein divrei tochachot. Because these are words of tochacha, of rebuke. Moshe is telling the Jewish people off. He's explaining to them things that they did wrong. Umana kan, kol hamikomos sheikh isu lifnei hamakom vahem. And he is going to be listing a list of places where they did something wrong that got Hashem upset at them. Lefecha, therefore, sasam es hadvarim. It hides the word. It's indirect. It's not saying, here's what Moshe said. Here's the rebuke that he gave. Here are the things that Moshe is taking on or telling them that they did wrong, that he's telling them off. Kind of a roundabout way. A little bit more of a hidden way of saying, here's what Moshe said. Not, and he said, with that harsh tone. V'hiskiram b'remes. Not only that, not only does it try to hide that rebuke words are coming up, but even within the rebuke, he hinted to it. The rebuke is not said straight out. He didn't say, you did this. He hinted at it. Why? Mipnei chodan shel Yisrael. Because of the honor of the Jewish people. How would it look for the Jews if you opened up the book and on the very first page you had a list of what they did wrong? And we're not going to get, that's the discussion of how it happened, why it happened. That's not for now. We're going to put that aside for right now. But the fact is that on their level, for who they were, the things that they did, they were held accountable for. It wouldn't be proper to start off like this. So we want to take some of the shame out. We want to take away some of that embarrassment. They had to be told off. They had to hear it. And we're going to discuss why it was so important to hear it. And we're going to discuss why specifically at this time they were being told. So hence, because of this, this is where we get our topic, reducing the embarrassment of rebuke. Right? Because what we're seeing here is how Moshe, while he has to give them some words to set them on the straight path, he's doing it in a much gentler and much more kinder way. And once we get to some of the examples here, and we go through our layers, we'll see how we can tie that in to the people in our life that sometimes we have to, right? Sometimes as children, a coworker, a staff member, a family member, comes up. There are people sometimes that, you know, are not acting okay towards us. Something is bothering us. Something that we want to discuss with another person. How are we going to get our message across in as nice of a way and in the most received way possible? So we'll take that from there. So again, so we'll look here for again another shout out word, and that is El Kol Yisrael, to all of the Jews. The word Kol also seems to be unnecessary. It seems to be extra to say Moshe spoke to the Jews. And we'll assume either they were all there, they weren't all there. What's the point of knowing that they were all there? So he spoke to some of them, and, you know, the ones who were there will hear the message and pass on the message. But it wasn't done that way. The message was done with everybody gathered. Why? Because, Rashi, down on the bottom, Ilu hochiach miktsasan, had Moshe only rebuked some of them. Only some of them were in the room. What would have happened? Hayu elu shebashuk omrim. Those that were out in the shuk, in the market, or wherever else, you know, I can't imagine what kind of a market there was out in the desert, but whoever was not there, you know, it's meaning to say whoever was busy, whoever was somewhere else, whoever was occupied and didn't come to this meeting, might say, Atem hayisem shomim ben Amram, v'lo hachivosem davar mikach mikach? What? You were there? You heard Ben Amram, the son of Amram? You heard that Moshe said something? And you didn't respond? Why did you say this? Why did you say that? Right? Ever have that? You know, always, you know, hindsight is 20/20. Like after we have a conversation with somebody or after we go home, we think of what we could have said or what we should have said or what, you know, could have been different. So there would have been people who weren't there. They might have something to ask. Or they may have taken offense at something that was said. And they're going to be upset at those that were there for not sticking up for them or not making a comment on what they had. Ilu hayinu sham. Well, you know what? Had I been there, hayinu meshivim also. If I was there, I would have said something to him. Why didn't you? You were there. Why didn't you say something? I would have said something. Lekach kansam kulam. Therefore, Moshe said, okay, we're not going to avoid that problem. We're not going to have that. We'll have Kol Yisrael. You all have to be there. Every single one of you. Be'amar lahem. Harei kulchem come. Okay, everybody. You're all here. You're all gathered here. Kol mi sheyesh lo teshuvah yashir. Whoever has something to say, feel free. Go right ahead. If you want to ask me about it, you want to tell me up on it, you want to respond to it, you have a defense for yourself, by all means, make sure you're there and you'll have a chance to respond. Okay? So what I want to try to do now, like as we're going along, is to store away these small pieces of information of what Moshe's doing and what the Torah is doing. Because these bits of information are going to gather up to a whole puzzle or a whole picture at the end of practical steps and practical guidelines that are appropriate not only for then, but even for now, and fascinating to see how when we look at, you know, modern psychology or modern methodology, modern methods, then we will see that it's not new. It's not so modern. It really happened 2,000 years ago. And we can start already making comparisons, I guess, in our own minds of what would that mean for us, or what would that mean in a real-life example, right? You come upstairs, and you find, you know, this happens to me. But you come upstairs, and you find someone's using marker all over the carpet. Right? What are you going to say? What are you going to respond? How is that conversation going to go? Right? You come in and you have left instructions for a coworker to take care of something. and you show up at work expecting, or I don't know so much expecting, depending on how positive you are, or at least hoping that when you got there, it would be taken care of, and it's not. How are you going to respond? What are you going to say? So we're going to start compiling what happened there and try to start making connections to what we can do or what that means for us. So let's look. Part of the hiddenness, part of the remazim, part of the hit as to what Moshe was getting at in the rebuke is coming up in these names of places. Bamidbar, in the Midbar, Ba'arava, in the plains, Mulsuf, opposite the Suf, the reeds, Bain Paran Ubain Tofa Bilavan, between Paran and Tofa Bilavan, Bechaseros and Chaseros, and then we have six, Bidizahav and Dizahav. That's six places that the Torah lists as to the geographical location. What we are going to find, based on Rashi, is that if you were to go to a map of 3,000 years ago, those places don't exist. There is no record, there is no place by those names, and in fact, the places where it says they are is not accurate as to really where they were when Moshe was talking to them. In the Midbar, by the sea. They weren't by the sea anymore, they weren't by the Midbar anymore, they were by the plains of Moab. They were at the outskirts of Israel. They were going to be entering Israel. Geographically, the places don't exist, and the ones that do exist is not where they were. So how do you explain that? So we'll go through each one. Okay? Bamidbar. In the Midbar. Lo Bamidbar Hayu. They were not in the Midbar. Ela Ba'arvos Moab. They were in the plains of Moab. I don't have a map for you here today, but it's not the right place. The Midbar, I believe, is south, and Arvos Moab is more. So what do we have? What was there? Mahu Bamidbar. So why does the Torah tell us that they were in the Midbar? Ela, rather, is trying to teach us, Bishvil Mashech Isuhu Bamidbar. For what they caused Hashem to get angry at when they were in the Midbar. So they're not there now, but when they were there, they did something which got Hashem upset. Shta Amru. What did they say that made Hashem? That's the Amru, they said, Mi Yutein Musenu. Why did we come here to die? And they complained about their status, they complained about their life in the desert. And it tells us that it's back in Shemot when they had first come out of Egypt. So he's reminding them of that went wrong. Okay, so again, we're not going to discuss today why they went wrong and why it was considered if it was wrong. The point is just that on their level, things were not acceptable, and he's calling them on it today. Ba'arava, in the plains. Again, they are not be'arava. They are not in the plains, but be is bishvil. That letter be stands for the Hebrew word bishvil, for the arava. What they did in the arava, what they did in the plains. What did they do? Shechat'u biba'al ta'ar. Beshitim ba'arvos Moav. That in the plains, in Arvos Moav, they worshipped a Baal Pe'ar, they worshipped an idol, and they got punished for that. There was an idol worship which was done in a very despicable way that they got caught up with the people of Moav, and we'll probably get back to it at another point, and they were severely punished for that. Many people died. There was a plague because of the idolatry and the idol worship that went on over there. That was another one. Mulsuf, opposite the Yamsuf. So again, we know the Yamsuf is the Red Sea, the sea that split. We just celebrated that. Almashehe Meiru be Yamsuf. On what they angered or embittered Hashem when they were at the Yamsuf. Bivoam le Yamsuf. When they got to the sea, they angered Hashem. She'amru, they said. Hamabli ein kvarim be Mitzrayim. Are there no graves in Mitzrayim? Why did they say that? They were faced with a sea in front of them. The Egyptians were behind them. The desert was to either side of them. There was no place to run into, no place to hide. So they're saying, Hashem, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? We could have died there and been buried there. We had to come here to be buried here. What's the difference? So that, we can understand where they came from on that, but on their level, again, that was unacceptable. And v'chein dinas av mito chaya. And then once the sea split and they were traveling away from the desert, there was an incident there also. Shene'emar v'yamru al yam v'yamsof. But they angered Hashem there. There was also some statements over there, which again, to their level, they were held to task for. So the yamsof is both entering when they got to the sea and when they are leaving the sea. Bein Paran u'bein Tofel v'lavan. And this is again, these two places between Tofel, between Paran and Tofel v'lavan. Let's pay attention to the word lavan. Lavan we could translate as the color white. Okay, so keep that in mind. Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Chazarnu al kol ha-mikra. We looked every place in the mikra. We looked all over the Torah. Long matinu makom sheshemo Tofel v'lavan. There is not a single mention anywhere in the entire Torah of a place called Tofel v'lavan, that word white. Ela, rather, hochichan al hadvarim. He rebuked them on the word. We have a Hebrew play on words here. Shetaflu al haman shehu lavan. Okay, so it's a rhyming word, but it's a play on words. Tofel v'lavan. Tofel, which I can't translate for you yet. And lavan, and the spice thing. So what is it? It's words shetaflu, that they complained, or that they mocked, or that they made fun of the man, that miraculous food that they got, which was white in color. So Tofel v'lavan is, again, not a place that can be found, but it comes from the expression of mocking something which is white. What were they mocking? They were mocking the man which they received. Ya'amru, and he's always bringing a proof. Right? He's not just making this up. He's bringing a proof from the pasuk in the place that it happened as to what they were referring to. B'nafshenu katsa b'lechem haklokel. We're disgusted with this bread that just seems to disappear inside of us and doesn't leave us. We eat and nothing gets evacuated. We don't know what to do with it. Ba'alma she'asu b'midbar paran. Paran is a name of a portion of a place of a part of the desert called Paran. Ayidei ha'miraglim. The sin of the spies happens in the desert, in the place of the desert, which is called Paran. And two more. V'chatseros. And Chatseros. What happened in Chatseros? Machlokaso shel Korach. The machlokas, the disagreements, the arguments of Korach against Moshe, where he tried to make himself in a higher position and dispose of Moshe's position. Davar acher. Another possible thing which happened in this area, Amar Lahem, he said to them, Haya Lahem lilmod mimasha asisi lemiriam bichatseirot. So we have two things that happened there. Either that the miraglim, Korah happened there, or that something happened to Miriam there. We know that Miriam was punished for speaking Lashon Hara, for speaking against her brother Moshe. She got sarah, she got leprosy because of that. She was in Chatseros when it happened. So you should have learned from her not to talk bad about others, but you didn't. You spoke against Hashem. You spoke against the land of Israel. When the spies came back, you didn't take into account that someone already said something wrong about someone else and they got punished. You did the same thing. You didn't learn from that. The D Zahav, again, we have a color, right? We have an element, actually. Zahav is gold. So what would that infer? Right? So we have the Egel has Zahav, right? We have the golden calf. Hokichan al ha'egel, he rebuked them on the calf, she'asu bishvil rov Zahav shehayalahem. They had so much gold, they had so much when they left Mitzrayim. We know that they emptied out the shrine. They took things with them. They had all this gold, and they collected it, and it became an egel zahav. Became the golden calf. Okay. So again, there is no mention here. If you look at face value, if you look just at the words, it's kind of innocent, right? You just look at it. Oh, you know, they're here, they're there, they're the other place. very calm, very benign, very hidden, like almost non-existent. Okay? And that actually is going to be the lesson that we're going to walk away with as we go through our layers of just because you're telling somebody off, it doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't have to be in their face. It doesn't have to be auditory or, you know, verbally abusive or painful or humiliating. And we could probably also, I guess, in preparation for, well, the next topic is going to go into something else, but we could probably start processing already now what we already know from our own life experiences and from whatever, you know, books or classes we've taken on, you know, whether it's the classroom or any seminars that we may have had in our work environment, right? And try to, again, we're seeing, again, we're trying to follow the pattern, we're trying to follow the flow and see how it relates to us. So we'll just go through. We want to see some more things to keep in mind. Pasuk Beis, the second pasuk, where it talks about the travel, of how long it should have taken them to travel from one place to the other. Really, it tells us that it should have only taken them 11 days, 11 days to get to Israel. Instead, it took them 40 years. Okay, we know why, and it actually goes through the calculation of how we got to the 11 days, and the point being that Hashem was in a rush to get them there. Hashem was ready to get them there as quick as he could, but because of the mistake that they made, they ended up, well, we think of it as roaming in the desert for 40 years. They weren't actually roaming for that amount of time. They were actually stationary in one place for almost half of the time. So they weren't actually moving around for the entire 40 years. But the point being is that you could have gotten there in 11 days. It took you 40 years to get there. That's quite a difference. Okay? And now let's listen to the timing of when Moshe speaks to them. Again, we said it's the 40th year, right? That 40 years is now ending, right? What of the 11 days which turned into 40 years is now ending. Being that Moshe's life is ending. Because we know that Moshe is not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. And he waits until that time to review. We don't see at the time, if we would go back to the Chumash of these other stories that we just mentioned of all these places, we don't necessarily see verbal rebuke for what they did. We hear the story. We are told of the story, and the Torah illustrates for us what happens. And we see by Egel, we do see, by the golden calf, we do see a whole conversation between Hashem and Moshe, where Moshe is trying to gain forgiveness for them. But we don't see where the Jews are necessarily told anything about what they did. So if we look into Rashi, and that will probably be our final Rashi for this evening, of why Moshe waited until this point. He had 40 years to tell them that, right? I mean, and some of this did not happen at the end of the 40 years. The miraglim happened, the spies happened at the beginning of the 40 years, right? So, you know, you wait so long to tell somebody. It's right. So, right, those people have all died out, right? Those people have all died out, so now we're ready to bring in the next generation. What happened? Milamed, Rashi tells us, this teaches us a lesson. Shelo hochichan, that he did not rebuke them. Ella, rather, it's a kind of a Rashi-ism. You know, it's like two negatives make a positive. Only, rather, meaning only. Okay? He didn't do it then, but rather, he did it now, samach lemisa, close to his death. Bimi lamad. Where did he learn that from? Where did he get that from? How did he know to do that? Yaakov, he had seen it done in the past from his forefather Yaakov. Shelo hochiach es banav ela samach lemisa. He also did not tell off his sons. He didn't say anything to his children about their behavior until he was almost dying, until he was on his deathbed. Amar, he said, Reuven zini, my my child, my oldest son, my Bechor, Reuven. Ani omer lecha, I'm telling you. Mipnei ma lo hochachticha kol hashanim halalu. Let me explain to you why I didn't tell you off for all these years, why I waited this long. Kedei shelo tani cheni. I was afraid that you would leave me. I was afraid that you would desert me. V'sei leich v'sidbach v'esav achi. I didn't want you to desert me and be upset at me and go join my brother Esav and, you know, be estranged from the family. U'mipnei arba'a devarim. Ein mochichin et ha'adam. Ela samach lisa. There are four reasons why a person may wait, or in this case, when they knew when their time of death was coming, they would wait and do that. There's four reasons. We're going to see two here, and then it gives a source of where the other two are. So we'll do the other two not from here. We'll do the first two that are listed here, and I'll fill you in on the other two. What are they? One. Kedei shelo yehe mochicho v'chozer u'mochicho. Because it's possible that if a person does something wrong and he tells him off, he's going to be chozer and chozer and chozer and chozer and repeating and repeating and repeating it. He might not get the message the first time. He might choose to ignore the message the first time, and then you're giving him the message again, giving him the message again, and you're giving him the message again, and you're giving him the message again. We call that in English. Right? You're telling it again and again and again and again, and you're just not getting it. So how does this solve the problem? How does it solve it? You just tell it once, and that's the end. You can't say it again. Okay, number two. Mishalo yeheicha veiro ro'ehu u'misbayesh. What happens if you tell somebody off? They're humiliated. They're embarrassed. And any time they see you from then on, they may feel like, and they're going to try to avoid you. And every time they see the person who rebuked them, it's going to remind them of what they did, or it's going to remind them of the feelings that they had when the person told them off. You know, not so pleasant. It's going to ruin the relationship. It's going to make it a little bit less pleasant than it could be. So, Yaakov waited, Moshe waited as well. And it says, "Could the east of the Sifri?" It tells us where it is. The chain, and he also gives another example. Yehoshua lo hochiach et Yisrael ela sami chlisa. Yehoshua also did the same thing. He didn't reduce the Jews until it was close to his death. And the chain Shmuel, Shmuel the Navi, the prophet Shmuel, also did not tell them off. Actually, the commentaries explain that it wasn't actually that he rebuked them close to his death, but he rebuked David when it was close to their separation, when he was departing from David. He didn't actually die, but it was, I guess, like a death because it was a departure. He wasn't going to be seeing him again. So what we'll take on for next time is we'll find out what those other two missing links are, the other two reasons, and then we're going to go through layer two of the words that Moshe used and why specifically he used it. But if anyone has any questions or comments, you can see how we can address them now. You're asking me?
I'm asking
anybody? Okay. Right.
What's on your mind? And the other thing is maybe if you could have said it before.
Well, ask what they could have said.
Okay. Anyone want to comment on that? Go ahead. Okay. Any comment on that? I think. What? You want to say something? Rebuke here, I'm using the word, I guess it's a generic term right now. You know what I'm saying? Right now it's generic. Rebuke is as in telling somebody off or explaining to somebody what they did wrong. Obviously, we're allowed to and should tell somebody. I mean, like, there's an obligation that if somebody is doing something that's upsetting to you, that if you feel, and again, we're going to see that this is within the guidelines, if you feel that by telling them something, it will help the situation, then you're obligated to tell them. We're going to see, though, that if by telling them it will not help the situation, it will make it worse, it's an obligation to not sin, right? So it's a generic term right now. It could mean criticize, a lot. It could mean to explain. It could mean to discipline, right? And actually, we're going to see, like, on some of the sources that we're going to get to, there's a book called Discipline with Dignity, right? And that's a teaching book. I think I got it from Hill. And it's actually, you know, so it's a generic term right now. It could apply in several ways. It doesn't have to mean this is harsh. I think that's the key thing, is that often when you hear the word rebuke, already we bristle, right? We already feel tense inside. And it shouldn't be that way. It could be, you know, we talk about positive criticism, right, or constructive criticism. That would probably be an accurate expression based on what we're doing. Which one? Okay, so mean that
they could have.
Why wouldn't they have? Okay, so based on what we said, let's see if we can answer that question. Why didn't they do it then?
They were credit for here.
So they weren't ready. You know, the temperament was different. People were different. They had a personality. They weren't ready for it. It was timing. Like, even like it's all in the timing. We're gonna see that as well. And we're going to see also that based on what you're all saying together, that two people could say the same exact thing and get opposite. Right? So we're going to discuss what leads to that also. Like, why using certain words, if it worked once, why did it get opposite results? Questions? It's important for everyone to have their documents handed in on time.
Exactly.
And if you're the one who handed it on time, say, oh, yeah. And right. And then the person who did will hope to say, you know, somehow it's the ones who know it and hear it are the ones who hear it. Right. Wasn't me. Yes. Right. So fair enough. We're going to touch on all of that. Okay? Questions?
My take was that why did we talk to them all? And you felt because you didn't want some people to say, well, I didn't hear it. I would have said this. I would have said that. In my mind, it was more like the people who didn't hear it, well, what do you want to talk? I didn't do anything wrong. It's the people who talked to me that did something wrong. And I think the way it's sort of different from, I think, what I heard, people pretty well sinned as a whole. They weren't like, you know, your secretary didn't prepare the They were almost all responsible.
They were all held accountable. If we actually look at some of the sins, the numbers were not very high. Like, let's say even when we talk about the biggest sin that we could think of, the sin of the golden calf, I think it was 3,000 people that got punished. And we're talking 3,000 people out of 600,000 men from 20 to 60. It's a very small percentage. So, yes, they were all held accountable. And because of, you know, like as I said, like it's touching upon so many other Torah concepts that are discussions in and of themselves, right? Like to go through why are they all held accountable, and if it was only this amount of people, why is it being so large? Like all those whole, there's so many other concepts that are involved. But yes, it is because they all involved, they're all responsible for it. And it, there is also part of that factor of not embarrassing people, making people aware of like, oh, maybe that was me, I better not do it next time, kind of thing. So we're going to touch on all of that. Two more questions. Okay. Okay, in the plural. Okay. I don't have any information right now, but I could see what I can do for you. I'll mark it down. That's somebody. Zulu and female. Okay, plural. Okay. Thank you for giving me homework. Yes, you. Sometimes no words are necessary, the consequences enough. Okay. Right. Fair enough. Okay. Scattered. Okay. I could look into that as well. There's a fly that's been chasing me all night. I could see if I can come up and see what the source is saying, if it's mentioned. Okay. So if anything comes up, if you think of anything during the week, feel free to let me know and give me some more food for thought. But again, I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me and my family personally that you are here, and I really, really am looking forward to this. I'm telling you, I am psyched. I am really, really like on a high, and my kids were in on it also. They were so cute. They were setting the table, and they were moving in the chairs, and they were all like, you know, very, very excited about this. So thank you, and I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Thank you.
Hello, ladies. I wanted to thank each of you for coming to hear Shane prepared remarks. It should be obvious that Shingle is an incredibly talented master educator. And I'm incredibly proud of her.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, he got the clue in his voice.
Oh, no, So, who's in the kitchen?
I saw I had not gone shopping since Pesach. I was too busy preparing. I'm cleaning up.
There'd be a little bit of lightning.
Hello. Hi.
I guess so.
Who are you?
Aruba.
Hi. I guess it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? What?
Yes, so.
Okay. I'm hanging up.